Michael Luckman is the director of the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research and founder of the Cosmic Majority, which is an organization that seeks to advance the views of the majority of people living right here on planet Earth who believe in UFOs, life on other planets throughout the universe, the paranormal. He taught the nation's first college course on rock music at the New York School for Social Research in New York City in 1971. Luckman's freewheeling Underground Tonight show, live on cable television in New York City, paved the way for the popular television programs like Saturday Night Live. He also produced several major UFO conventions in New York, featuring rock and roll musicians, and is the visionary behind the Signal to Space concerts, which is an historic event that will beam live rock and pop music to Mars, the Moon, and other locations in the solar system and beyond, in the hope of making contact with extraterrestrials. In his role with the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research, Luckman announced the discovery of two human-like faces on Mars, photographed by NASA's Global Surveyor. Was the first investigator to expose television's infamous alien autopsy footage as a hoax, and broke the story of a special initiative by billionaire philanthropist at the time, Lawrence Rockefeller, to open the government's secret X files. He's our guest tonight at Coast to Coast. Michael, how are you?
I'm real good, George. Glad to be with you.
Good to have you, too. What a series of credits you have in this field. How did you get interested in it?
I would say just average interest in terms of sci-fi, the usual thing that kids would have growing up. And one of my favorite films of all time was The Day the Earth Stood Still. That made a powerful, had a powerful effect on me. And since that time, I just gradually grew into an interest of in UFOs and more recently the paranormal as well.
The Day the Earth Stood Still, probably still, I think, one of the best alien UFO movies ever made.
Yeah, it made a tremendous impression on me. And, of course, the new War of the Worlds, while it's very, very exciting for any moviegoer, I did get a chance to see it at a preview. But, you know, the message is everything is now in reverse from what Spielberg started out to do. So, you know, go figure.
Well, now, did you have a strong background in music as well, Michael? You must have.
Well, I had, you know, basic interest in rock music, and then that grew, of course, with my putting together the first college course in rock music, where I brought people in from the industry to, you know, show a behind the scenes view of what goes on and how hits are made.
Well, I got to tell you, the research into your book, Alien Rock, it was really fantastic. I did not realize how many people in the music business, how many people who are tremendous talent, those that are still alive and those that have passed on, had such a serious interest in this field. It's really staggering.
Yeah, no, it really cuts very deep. You know, when I started out, I knew that there was a certain amount of connection between rock stars and musicians and extraterrestrials, but I never knew it cut as deep as it does.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the research that went into the book, first of all. How do you dig up information like that?
Well, of course, you start, I guess, the way you start is with the songs themselves. Many groups have done songs through the years that have been related to, such as the Mr. Spaceman by the Byrds. And then you go from there. You know, I knew of a few cases. I knew that John Lennon, for example, had had a UFO sighting when he was living with his then-girlfriend, May Pang, and that they saw a UFO from a Manhattan rooftop from their penthouse apartment. And this thing was large enough, John said, to fit two people in.
Now, but is this something that they would freely talk about, or did you have to pick this up from other people?
Well, they did talk about it. John was very serious about it. He was very, very impressed by it and really made an enormous impression on him. And he even wrote about it in Andy Warhol's Interview magazine at the time.
You know, Michael, as a person who has looked into this field in really subject matter for all my life practically, I did not know, for example, that someone like Elvis Presley, his whole life seemed to revolve around this, yet it really, it was never publicly known, at least as far as I knew.
Well, that's right. Well, you know, this book really comes out of the blue with some sensational evidence that the public is just basically unfamiliar with. I had no idea. And that's, of course, the big surprise that awaits people when they go and they read this book. And this book, I promise you that they're going to find their heads going to spin with some of the information that's in here, not only about Elvis, just Elvis, the story about Elvis alone is phenomenal, and then it goes from there into the connection with the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Jerry Garcia and about eight rock stars who have been abducted through the years, including Cat Stevens and Rick Wakeman of Yes and lots of others.
Well, old Cat Stevens got picked up on a plane too, not too long ago.
He did.
So he still gets nabbed, doesn't he?
Yes, one way or the other.
Elvis Presley. Let's talk about him for some time. When did all this start to happen for him? Childhood?
Well, it actually started at birth. The amazing thing that I found out, and this is according to Vernon Presley, his father, who's since passed on, but Vernon Presley claimed that there was a strange blue light that was seen by both himself and the attending physician in a small two-room shack in Tupelo, Mississippi, at the exact moment when Elvis came into this world, perhaps from another one.
Well, when this blue light appeared, I mean, did it give him any special powers as a little kid?
What? I don't know about that. Well, there does seem to be a definite connection, because the next thing you know, when he's about 8-9 years old, he has communication apparently with two beings of light who show him what his future will be like in what he will be doing in the future. Of course, as a little kid, he doesn't know what he's looking at, and it's actually him. It's a man in a jumpsuit on stage, presumably in Vegas, performing.
Well, the music of Presley never reflected his beliefs, or did it?
In a sense, it did. Not in the terms of using,
It wasn't obvious, right?
But in terms of the spirituality aspect, which he had, you know, he felt that UFOs were messengers from God, and he certainly was into the gospel thing very strong. In fact, he won Grammys for some of his gospel albums.
Did some of these beliefs push his career?
No, actually, the concern on the part of Colonel Tom Parker, his manager, was that Elvis, particularly toward the end of his career, was getting on this New Age kick, and that would be harmful to his career. He wanted him simply to focus on making these rather mediocre movies at times, and as well as on his record making and his live performances. And so much so that he actually ordered Elvis had with him all the time 300 library of about 300 metaphysical books that a guy by the name of Larry Geller, who was a spiritual advisor who had a profound impact on Elvis and whom I've spoken to, had arranged for him to get. And at the end of this period of Elvis being so active with New Age subjects, he was asked to, Colonel Parker had the books burned.
Now,
I
didn't know he had a spiritual advisor.
He did, and actually, and the man who was a spiritual advisor was they met on the set of a movie. Actually, he was a hairstylist. He was Elvis's hairstylist, and he was with him for a very long, very very long period until Colonel Parker fired him. And this was what got Elvis all stirred up on subjects like pyramids and UFOs and aliens and all of these things.
Well, Geller did a good job with Elvis's hair, so I assume Elvis probably figured he knew everything.
Well, maybe so. I don't know, but actually, Geller's hair was very similar to Elvis. There's a picture of Elvis and Larry Geller and Colonel Parker in my book.
I never heard Elvis try to force these beliefs on anybody. Ever.
No, he didn't. In fact, quite the contrary. But he did find that he had some special powers that apparently came to him as a result of his contact with these beings of light when he was a child. And he developed them in such a way that he was able to, for example, make clouds move in the sky. He also found, and this is of particular use, he found that he had the ability of hands-on healing, faith healing. And he engaged in it often, and so much so that he became known for it among a small circle of individuals, and a lot of people sought him out, even at Graceland, for him to help.
Is Elvis, in this belief that he had of UFOs, did he carry this thing to his grave, Michael? I mean, did this follow him throughout his career, or did it stop at a certain point?
No, it seems to have followed him pretty much throughout his career. I don't know quite how many sightings he had, but I discuss about in quite a bit of detail about the, I would say, about four or five different sightings that he had. I mean, outside of a recording studio in Los Angeles, at his various places of residence. No, this is something that was a recurring thing. Even at Graceland, UFOs showed themselves. And this is the kicker. Finally, after he died, and of course he's buried in the meditation garden in Graceland, UFOs reportedly were seen over his grave site.
Well, you got to be kidding.
No, they were. I talk about them in Alien Rock, the Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection, and they were seen. They were seen coming down fairly low, actually. Above his resting place.
You tell a story in the beginning of the book about one of Elvis's earliest encounters. Would you tell us about this? This was out there in the desert.
Well, there was an encounter in the desert in which he felt the sensation of his hair almost standing on end, and he also had sort of a prickly feel on his skin. And he was with a bunch of his people, and it was real hot, of course, and they saw this flying saucer. His bodyguard, this guy by the name of Lamar Fisk, actually hit the ground, and there was concern whether he was still alive or not. And apparently it just passed out by the sight of it, but there was some concern, actually, whether this was an abduction that was about to happen and Elvis was going to be abducted.
He said it was like cigar-shaped.
Yes, it was cigar-shaped, and I believe there were portholes seen.
The desert portion of where he saw this, anything specific in terms of where exactly?
No, we don't have the exact location.
I wonder if he was out there by Area 51 out there in Nevada.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, you know, you did go to Vegas a lot.
Yes, that's true, so, for sure.
Now, of all the rock and roll stars, Michael, that you investigated in this phenomena, which one had it the most? Was it Elvis, or were there others?
Well, you know, when you say had it the most, it's true. That's very interesting, that question, because Elvis, of course, being the guy who popularized the rock and roll, being the king of rock and roll, and the period in which he was alive and functioning as a major superstar, happens to correspond with the the modern era, really, of ufology. Happens to be a pivotal point, launching pad for the rest of what's followed, which is involvement of the subject by members of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, then from there, of course, David Bowie, Jimi Hendrix, and then many, many others who I also discuss in the book.
What does it tell you about the field of ufology, or also the creativeness of what these people do? I mean, is there some kind of synergy between the two?
I think there definitely is, George. I mean, you know, when you're out there, you know, when you're, first of all, when you're out, I do think that creative types are more open to experiencing these things than people who are not that creative. Their minds are just more open for these things. But in the case, you know, Elvis, the rock stars are often on the road late at night, going from one gig to another. So they really have a lot of opportunity to see strange things up in the sky.
Who was the rock star who did somebody put a telescope on top of his limousine?
That's David Bowie. Few people know this. David Bowie was in his early period when he first hit the United States for a tour. He actually had in his limousine, he had a telescope mounted. He bought a telescope, an expensive one, had it mounted on the rooftop of the limousine so he could go searching for aliens between stops, between engagements.
Did he ever find any?
He didn't find any, in that particular period, but he certainly did see lots of UFOs during the filming of The Man Who Fell to Earth. And even, when he was a youngster, he edited a UFO magazine. He had tremendous interest in all of this and continued to have this interest, even though he tries to downplay it today, saying that he didn't necessarily mean, many of his lyrics literally, but he wasn't, necessarily. But the fact of the matter is that there was a period there in the 70s when he was as hardcore as you could get on his belief in UFOs and extraterrestrials. He does still believe it today, but he would actually, at the time when he'd be interviewed, go to the window many, many times and interrupt the interview to see if UFOs were waiting for him outside.
Hey, tell me about Signal to Space concerts, since okay. We're talking about music.
Yeah, well, the Signal to Space concerts, and I love to have Bowie is among the artists. The idea of the Signal to Space concerts, we hope to launch them in the the summer of 2006. The point is to beam a musical signal of space to points in our solar system, to Mars, to the moon. You can get a message through the beam music or anything to the moon in a matter of just seconds. You can send something to Mars in about just a matter of minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and get a response back if there is to be a response. So we plan to actually use a relay system and send music up to the stars and to points in our solar system, live musical message of peace, and with international superstars.
So we're going to send up some pretty good music, at least, huh?
Well, we're going to send up some great music. And one of the things that I discovered, and I have a whole chapter in my book about, is that UFOs have dropped in unexpectedly at various rock concerts. So it does draw a complete picture of a connection. I mean, the UFOs were seen at the Woodstock Festival. UFOs were seen at the Altamont Raceway Rolling Stones event. UFOs were also at the Isle of Wight Festival, Jimi Hendrix's filming of Jimi Hendrix's Rainbow Bridge concert, and lots of other places.
Well, that's strange that all this would occur, too, and you would get these witnesses then who would see these craft over most of these events. Wonder why, though. Why music? Why Woodstock? Why places where a lot of people congregate? What are they trying to do?
Well, they didn't come down, they didn't land, but they did make them, they were seen. They may not have been seen by everyone in the crowd, but they have been seen. It's impossible. I'm often asked questions that, which really require putting yourself in the position of the extraterrestrials themselves, which, of course, is not a very easy thing to put yourself in the position of extraterrestrials, because these beings are literally, according to scientists, perhaps 100,000 times more intelligent than us, perhaps even up to a million times more intelligent than us. So it's very, very hard to know what the, what the motives are. But we plan to, go further than concerts have gone up until this point, and concentrate a live message, which will a musical message of peace, and it will not only be music; it will also be use of high pulsed lasers to attempt communication.
That's pretty fascinating. And, of course, as the director of the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research, you're onto a lot of things. Let's talk a little bit about that when we come back, Michael. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, by the looks for the phones, don't worry, it's not time yet, but we will get you an opportunity to talk with Michael Luckman later. Alien Rock, the rock and roll extraterrestrial connection. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about his organization, the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research, and also, because it happened out there, John Lennon. What's going on with him? Because there are some who say he's still trying to communicate with people, and it's not with music. Back in a moment. Well, it was 1980. John Lennon was outside the Dakota Apartments in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And all of a sudden, the horrible happened. He was shot to death. Michael Luckman, our guest. Michael, when they talk about the day the music stopped, which, of course, is an old takeoff to the old songs of Way Gone Back, it also could be reflected for John Lennon, because, quite frankly, for a lot of us, when he died, that was the day the music stopped as well. But Did it end there? Some people say it never did. Something happened.
Well, there are a number of interesting things that have happened since that I've kind of been connected to in a couple of instances. One of them, interestingly enough, was had to do with a piano that John used out on Fire Island one summer when he was composing one of his albums. I believe it was the Double Fantasy album. And he and Yoko were out on Fire Island, and anyway, that particular piano wound up at a memorabilia store in Manhattan called Gotta Have It Collectibles, and it was put on display there, particularly at the time of his birthday. I happened to be handling the store as a client.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from the owner, one of the owners, and saying that there was a that the piano, which was the keyboard, was in the down. There was a lid on the keyboard, and it had basically struck a note, which is impossible to happen by itself on that day. It happened at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There was a low note that was struck on that piano by itself. There was a witness. There was a woman lawyer from down south who happened to be in the store at the time, and both the co-owner and the woman looked at each other when it happened. I spoke to Elliot Mintz, who was at that time Yoko's representative, and to tell him about it, and I knew that Elliot had a general interest in the paranormal subjects. He found it very interesting, asked me a few questions, asked us to send a fax a letter to Yoko, which we did. We never heard back from Yoko at that time. However, I do believe that when Yoko sees, and I have been in touch with her, and she gave us permission to reproduce her Star Piece album cover, in which she's holding a crystal ball, and she's certainly into all of these subjects that we, most of these subjects that we discussed. I think that she's going to be really very surprised. She knows about the piano incident already, but there are also a number of photographs that are reproduced in Alien Rock for the first time that are real mind blowers. One of them shows a ball of light, a small ball of light with a star, a faint star, and a small, almost like comet of a trail of a comet behind it. It's quite faint, but the ball is very, very distinct. And there it is on film. It was taken by a woman who happens to be a psychic by the name of Helene Ayulo from Connecticut. And this was taken about 9 years ago, and she took a snapshot of her friend standing in front of the decoder at the exact place where John was, or nearly at the exact place where at the entranceway where John was murdered. And there you see this round object. Now it wasn't; it's definitely not a reflection or anything like that. It wasn't visible to the naked eye. Helene, the photographer, didn't see it. She used a simple throwaway camera. She knows nothing about photography whatsoever, except just how to use a throwaway camera. And she had taken a picture of her friend, just a snapshot, standing there. And then when it came back from the developer, here was the, you know, here was this picture. There's another picture that she took actually the evening of John's birthday this past year. She took a picture. He had a couple of frames left on the roll, and she took a picture up in the sky. This is a time when Mars was very, relatively speaking, the closest to the Earth it had been, I believe, in about 50,000 years. So she took a picture just of the Moon and Mars looking up above the Dakota, and there you see three distinct objects, a very large, apparently large, oval-shaped UFO with lots of energy. I mean, you compare it to the sun, and it's putting out a lot of energy, and there it is. Now, again, no one saw it with the naked eye, only when it came back from processing. I do not believe it was tampered in any way. There's a third picture, which is also reproduced in Alien Rock for the first time, that shows a what may be John's, it sounds strange, but a faint impression of John's head, his face, on his head, between the shoulders of both Helene and Julia Baird, John's half sister. This was a snapshot that was taken by somebody for Helene at a Beatles convention, and there you see what appears to be John's head. Moreover, The more I've investigated this picture, the more interesting it's become. And I'm going to have it tested in much greater depth. It shows what is definitely, and I don't think that this was played with, two alien heads in an area where in the area of the hair on the photograph, two small alien faces, stereotypical gray aliens. Now, what all of this is doing in the same picture, I don't know, but there it is.
It is strange. I got to tell you, looking at the picture, it does have a bizarre look to it.
Yeah, it really does, and if this picture hasn't been tampered with, and Helene not only is a wonderful person, but I am she's told me that she'd be happy to, take a lie detector test if necessary or that sort of thing. She's willing to do that. So, we are going to go that far with it because we've gone as far as we've gone up to now. I think Yoko, when she sees what's in the book, is going to be really very, very amazed and surprised, I think, like most people reading the book for the first time, and how many, as you said at the beginning of the show, how many rock stars there are who are really, really into this and who have had experiences, even all the way up to abduction experiences.
Well, there's just no question that I think John Lennon had his finger on the pulse of the unknown, the mysterious.
Yeah.
And he probably, if you believe in life after death, he's probably trying to communicate somehow.
Yeah, and he may have managed to out Houdini by doing that banging on the piano and appearing, the spirit photos and all that. But Yoko is going to be very, I think, happily surprised to see those pictures.
You give credit to some people in your book,
yes.
One of which includes a friend of our program, Tom Van Flander,
yes.
The astronomer. Tell me, what was his role? Did he just help you with some ideas?
Well, Tom, I don't know if Tom's into rock and roll. I don't know. Maybe he is. I don't want to say that he's not, but Tom's a good friend. We worked together about 2 or 3 years ago. Tom and I announced some new visual material that had come through from NASA that his folks had analyzed, and it included this extraordinary photograph of a face on Mars, not the one that we all know originally,
right.
The one that Richard Hoagland has made so
exactly.
Much of, but rather one that looks like your next-door neighbor, a photograph of a man or a woman. That some people think it's more of a woman, but whatever it is, it has sort of an Egyptian type of headdress, but here is a woman or man. But like a photograph, almost as if you took a snapshot, a close up of somebody, and you layered it on top of a photo of the of Mars. This is though is a real NASA photograph. It's been analyzed, and it's totally lifelike, and it's not the rough type of image that we saw originally on that one face. But this is like it. The New York Post reproduced it almost. Half a page as a result of our press conference at that time.
We've got to take a few moments by the end of the program tonight, Michael, and just talk about your work with extraterrestrial research, because it's very, very strong. Sammy Hagar, now you write a little bit about him, and a lot of people might not know, but he admitted seeing a UFO, some kind of encounter with an ET, did he not?
Yeah, he said that when he was maybe in his late teens or so, that he had an encounter where basically he claims that that almost everything in his brain was essentially downloaded, and he saw bright light, and he saw not beings per se, more a feeling of a presence and light. But it shook him up plenty, and he feels that from his communications from them that they come from a planet that he refers to as the ninth planet, wherever that may be.
They're finding them awfully quickly these days, aren't they?
They really are, every 5 minutes. But that's a whole other subject. I'm very interested in the whole Planet X, the Sitchin thing, is, of course, Tom as well. I should mention, by the way, that Alien Rock, the Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection, which you can get, by the way, at Amazon.com, through Amazon.com or at local bookstores, That photograph is reproduced also in the book, and people who see that for the first time of that extraordinary face are just blown away. And there are also pictures of the famous tunnels that Tom and I have been talking about as well.
You know, Jerry Garcia, Grateful Dead,
yeah,
had an encounter where doesn't he claim that he was abducted for a couple days by,
yeah, that's
by reptilians?
The strangest thing. Yeah. This is one of the big surprises in writing this book.
This is an unbelievable story.
Yeah, Jerry found himself. He claimed that he was locked in some kind of a futuristic spaceship for a period of 2 days, and it was quite a harrowing ordeal to hear him talk about it in an interview. Of course, this was done before his death. He claims that he actually felt or saw insectoid presences, the kind of thing I suppose that, you know, some abductees have talked about fairly recently, the praying mantis type aliens, and not so much the little gray man, but
right.
More these kinds of things, which, you know, on the face of it is very difficult for a lot of people to comprehend, even people who believe in UFOs and UFO abduction. But nonetheless, he had that experience.
Well, in a lot of people have for years had a very difficult time trying to grasp the subject matter of the reptoids or the praying mantis type.
Yeah,
it's scary to a lot of people, and quite frankly, Michael, if I ever saw one of those critters, I'd be a little afraid too.
Oh, absolutely, no question about it. But you know, this is the exception to the rule. I mean, most of the experiences that I report on in Alien Rock have more to do with the traditional type of encounters with beings or with spaceships and that sort of thing.
Did you stumble across anything that had to do with any evil or anything demonic that some of these rock stars had either believed in or came across?
Well, no, not in terms of that. But I do discuss something for the first time also in the book. The book's full of a lot of blockbusters, and one of them is in a chapter called EMF, Extraterrestrial Musical Forces. This is my term for the songwriting process itself and the performing process itself, and where the music may be coming from. You go back to ancient Greece, and there was talk about muses, and that muses were credited often by poets and philosophers and artists for giving them their inspiration. In the case of modern day rock and roll, it turns out that there are a surprising number of rock stars, many, many, many of them, including the Beatles, including Michael Jackson in the pop area, including all kinds of people, members of Led Zeppelin. I list probably about 30 or 40 different individuals and groups who have had Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen. The list just goes on and on. And they talk about having not knowing where their songs are coming from. And in many cases, and this is what's particularly interesting, they talk about that there's some outside force that seems to be driving, in many cases, their performances, even on stage, where there's music coming out on stage, where maybe there are six or eight members of a group performing on stage, and they don't know where some of the music is coming from. They don't feel like they're in control of it many times. They're along for the ride is something that comes up over and over and over again. So I think that when I say in Alien Rock, the Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection, that there is a connection, I think it's a very direct connection. And I think that many of the top 10 songs of today have been written by extraterrestrial forces. I won't say extraterrestrials, but something off Earth. The wrong people, perhaps in some cases, are getting the royalty checks.
What I find to be incredible is in the index of your book, where you list all the various subject matter and the names of the rock stars, have you noticed the correlation between these rock stars who have witnessed some kind of UFOs and either died tragically, died young, maybe died of an overdose, maybe they were shot to death? the numbers are staggering, Michael.
Well, I don't know, but are you saying specifically a connection with UFOs?
Well, I'm just saying that their visitations, their sightings, their stories, these people all seem to have died either young, you know, drug overdoses, they were shot to death. I mean, they died in very strange ways that most people don't die, and I just find that to be strange. I mean, here's so on one hand, you have these incredible UFO cases with these people, these visitations, these sightings, and then a lot of them die. Is it because of the industry, the music industry, or does it have anything to do with the sightings?
Well, I think it's an interesting point. I don't know that there's really a correlation there with UFOs as such. I mean, as far as the kind of life that they lead, we know that their lifestyle is pretty stressed. And there's a great deal of pressure for them to literally for them to perform and to keep the numbers going and their record sales and all of that. I would think that it's much more that. I don't know that there's really any, you know, I don't see any connection so far from my study of this. I've been doing this now for about 3 years. I mean, there are a lot of rock stars presently who have had sightings, and I would be very surprised to see if they drop dead tomorrow. I don't think that's going to happen.
Let's hope not. But I guess then one could think that because of the industry they're in, they tend to live a very fast, in some cases, reckless life.
Very tough life. Both good and bad. I mean, it's got its ups and its downs. A lot of extremes.
Of some of the people who gave you the information into the book, did they want to remain confidential?
Well, I had a whole assortment, a whole range of different sources for the book. Some of them wanted to remain confidential. Some of my best sources were actually a couple of ex-wives. For example, Angela Bowie was very cooperative toward the book. David Bowie, unfortunately, wasn't, because Bowie, while I had a lot of information, which is in the book, and there are lots of accounts of Bowie's interest in the subject, but he, you know, today is a little more conservative than he used to be in the day when he ran around as Ziggy Stardust with Martian red hair, and you know, so he believes in extraterrestrial life and stuff, and we'd like to certainly have him be one of the headliners at the Signal Space concerts next summer.
You write about Jim Morrison. We'll have some time when we come back. I am trying to follow a couple possible leads, long shots, albeit, that Jim Morrison could still be alive. Have you ever heard anything about that?
Yeah, I have heard that. I don't put much credence in that, but I'm always open to hear.
All right, stay
with
us, Michael.
No information.
We'll be back with you in a moment. Alien Rock, we'll talk about more of your work in the extraterrestrial research area, and we'll continue chatting about Alien Rock, the rock and roll extraterrestrial connection. And then later on tonight, we'll open up the phone lines. You and Michael can chat a little bit about this. Well, Michael, some people are asking me about a couple people, Frank Black from the Pixies. So did they ever experience anything?
Well, I don't know whether he ever had an experience or not, but he certainly, you know, has done some songs and definitely has an interest in the subject. I believe the Pixies, Frank Black, contributed to the one of the X-Files compilation albums. And I understand you mentioned Led Zeppelin before.
Yes, and Jimmy Page.
Yeah, Jimmy Page. Well, you know, actually, I have something about Led Zeppelin and Jimmy Page in the one chapter I was referring to before, Extraterrestrial Musical Forces and the Source of the Music. And Jimmy Page was in a rather bad mood, as he describes it, when he sat down and he was just scribbling some notes on a piece of paper. And he said that he almost leapt out of his chair when he saw what he had written, which was Stairway to Heaven.
A great one, too. A great one. Jimi Hendrix used to tell people that he was from Mars.
Yeah, well, he told the New York Times reporter, I think he was playing with his head, but I don't know that Jimi was actually from Mars. He might have acted at times. But what's interesting about Jimi Hendrix is that his own manager claimed that Jimi, and I believe him, that Jimi had some kind of a spirit that essentially was inhabiting him, that had taken him over, and that Jimi didn't want to have, and yet was there, and he couldn't do much about it.
You intermix in the book real UFO cases, such as Roswell, the case at Rendlesham in England.
Yes.
With other issues too. Tell me why the interweaving?
Well, you know, I thought that this would be a very good opportunity to acquaint the general public, who a lot of people will be reading this book for the first time, who are interested in rock and roll and never had any idea of the connection with extraterrestrials. And I felt this would be a good opportunity to educate the public about the reality of this subject. And the reaction to the book so far, the book's only been out for about a week or so now.
That's it?
And it's been absolutely unbelievable.
Well, excellent. Wait till you get the hit after this program, Michael.
I can't wait.
The organization, New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research, tell me about that.
Well, the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research has been around for about 15 years now. Basically, it's a small organization, very informally run. We're basically functioning as a clearinghouse of information so that we're in touch with organizations, UFO groups and organizations all over the country and all over the world. And I'll tell you, what I'm trying to do now is to, I believe in fate. I don't believe in accidents. And I think that the reason I'm here on this planet right at the moment is to be able to, I'm hoping that this book actually can launch a movement that's never existed before. There's been a UFO movement of sorts, but the movement has been, you know, represented by MUFON, let's say, at its top, at its peak, where there were perhaps, I don't know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 members, let's say. That, to me, isn't a movement. It's an organization, but it's not a real social movement. And any of the other organizations would be smaller than that. We've been at a period right now where actually the subject has been fairly, relatively speaking, quiet, certainly very quiet in the media. The conferences are much smaller and that sort of thing. I think that this book is going to represent a turnaround, because I've been hearing from some rock stars, and I expect to be hearing from many, many more of them, some of them closeted, but many of them who are really into this subject, who are coming forward, and I expect will be coming forward, for example, to be involved with the Signal of Space concerts. And this is a way of getting large numbers of people, of young people and people of all ages, involved with this subject. You see, I believe that we're really running out of time on this planet. Whether you believe in the end times or not, whether you believe in the Mayan calendar, the year 2012 being a demarcation point or not, I really think that it's obvious, and we're not being told by the weather people, that's for sure, what is really going on. I mean, we're told on a daily basis what the weather's going to be, but we're not told that the environment is totally out of control. And the irony, of course, is that a lot of that has to do with energy, and a lot of that has to do with oil. And here we're fighting a war in Iraq, which is a very unpopular war like the Vietnam War. I think that that it's time to start a new movement, a real movement to try to contact extraterrestrials, and in the hope that perhaps they may be able to help us out of some of our problems, our warmongering. That's another story. That's been around for a very long time. But, you know, perhaps they can help us in some way with some of the vast problems that we're facing right now.
Oh, I would hope so, Michael. Sometimes I wonder, maybe they just don't want to get involved with our affairs after they see the way we run this planet.
Yeah, well, that could be too. But we got to give it a shot, because I think we're really running out of time. I think the kind of calamities that are going to be happening in terms of the environment really are going to be very, very difficult. Not everyone's going to be hit the same way at the same time. Some people won't be hit at all, but there's going to be some terrible things, I'm afraid, coming forward. And at least I think that this is a way to kind of prepare the public for perhaps for the next level, if you will.
One of my favorite stories, you touch upon it in the book, has to do with Jackie Gleason he was playing golf with Richard Nixon at the time.
Yes.
And he asked Nixon, come on, are there really aliens? Pick up the story from there.
Well, he, according to Beverly McClintock, one of Gleason's wives, Richard Nixon showed up at their place one day and took Jackie to Homestead Air Force Base and showed him the ultimate evidence, presumably, the the little men, the bodies possibly from Roswell or possibly from some other crash, but showed them the remains. Now, I'm not sure whether that, you know, I don't know whether that story has legs or not. I mean, I know that Beverly McClintock had written that for a book that never got published. Certainly, Jackie Gleason was extremely into the subject of UFOs. He, when he had a show, a network show with CBS Television, part of the deal involved they bought him a house, and it was totally circular. The whole house and all of the rooms and most of the furniture was circular, as well as the garage. He called the main house the mothership and the garage the scout ship.
And wasn't it true that he was really never the same personality-wise after that episode?
Well, I don't know about that.
But I
know that he had a very, very, very large library of metaphysical and paranormal UFO books, which he donated to one of the universities upon his death.
Well, it is a great story. And one of the things I heard was that Nixon, as president, drives up the Homestead Air Force Base with Jackie Gleason. It's the two of them, no Secret Service.
Yes.
And the soldier at the guard shack sees the president there, and he was like in shock.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The work that you've done in the feedback that you've gotten on this story in the last week, what's it like?
Now, which story?
All of them. The book in general.
Well, the book, I tell you what's been generating the most interest, as you might. Well, the Elvis thing has generated a lot of interest in the and the book itself. But the thing that I've gotten the most worldwide publicity the fastest had to do with Michael Jackson, because I have a chapter in my book that just so happens about Michael.
What's up with him?
Well, you know, I talk in my book about Michael has seen, for first of all, Michael seeing when he was in his early 20s, seeing an awesome type of sighting out of the cockpit of an airplane. It's in the book. I describe what Michael saw, which basically were lights, all different colors, turning in the sky, almost looking like colored crystals. And he's very excited about it, and he asked the pilot if he had ever seen it. I think it was over Alaska, and the pilot said that he hadn't. So this turned Michael onto the subject tremendously. When I ran into him about a year ago in New York, he said flatly, I do believe in aliens, and I, you know, offered to show him some of the evidence that I've accumulated through the years. Michael also has been very involved, as you know, in all kinds of things that are controversial and pretty wild, and that includes at one time he had plans to build an alien airport or alien landing strip, if you will, in Nevada. In fact, I was the one who basically put that story out in the media. He had had some kind of a dream in which he saw an alien, and he had the idea to build a high-tech landing strip, really something right out of Close Encounters, which is one of his favorite movies. He also had seen claims that he saw E.T., the extraterrestrial, that movie, Spielberg movie, about 500 times, and had shown the movie to his kids as well a lot of times.
A lot of these rock stars were in altered states. I mean, they used drugs in many cases.
Yeah.
Do you believe, Michael, that that had anything to do with the inducement of seeing extraterrestrials?
I would say very, very little. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I would say little. Now, my sequel book, Alien Rock 2, will deal with the subject, get into a little bit more with the subject of drugs, because it is possible that, for example, the psychedelics and mushrooms and that sort of thing, and there have been some studies conducted on this, you know, does open up a whole new, you know, avenue.
You see, and I'm not saying that they hallucinated. It may have opened up some kind of communication portal.
That's correct. In fact, when I'm discussing, one of the things I discuss in the book is DMT, the so-called spirit molecule. And people who have taken DMT under, you know, controlled conditions in testing, I think there were about 70 individuals who Dr. Strasberg conducted a study, and they and And they all claimed, or most of them claimed, that they actually had a contact with alien intelligences. So there is that component to it. But most of, I would say 95% or more, 98% of what's in the book really, I believe, has little or nothing to do with drugs. John Lennon, for example, made a big point that at the time when he had seen the UFO, that he wasn't high on anything. And he really went to great length to say that, and called the newspapers to see if there had been any other sightings, if anyone else had seen it, and there had been some people had called in to the newspaper, but not a large number.
Great story about Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. Why don't you fill us in on that one?
Well, Dan Aykroyd, you know, is a very brave man. I mean, he went on the David Letterman show, and he had Timothy Good's book, Above Top Secret, and he started to talk about how UFOs are real. And David, of course, David Letterman, of course, was not interested in the least, because he doesn't believe in that sort of thing. And said, "Oh, let me throw it in the garbage pail." And he said, "No." He said, "I'm very serious about this." And he said, "You know, they're military, they're pilots, and the people like you know of that you can't question really that have seen these things." Dan claims that he had an experience fairly recently when his show, just before his show was canceled on the Sci-Fi Channel, and he was standing outside having a cigarette. He got a call from Britney Spears on his cell phone, and he turned around and he saw, this is, I believe, in Times Square, right outside the studio where his series Out There, which was ultimately canceled, was being shot. And he saw what he believes were real MIBs. That is, he saw a black sedan. He saw two very unfriendly-looking characters in it, and one of them got out and gave him a real dirty look from across the street. He turned around. He's on the phone, and just split seconds later, he turns back, and the car's gone. He said there's no way that car could have gone past him without him being aware of it. He said that, you know, there's too much traffic. There's just no way. He believes that it actually was MIBs, which, of course, you don't hear about very often these days.
You were one of the few at the time to debunk the alien autopsy footage. What was it about that? Because I thought it looked fake, too. What was it about that video, that footage, that film that made you come to that conclusion?
Well, just exactly what you said. It looked fake. It just looked fake. And I took a chance with it. I didn't think I was taking much of a chance. Some people said that, you know, some UFO veterans said, "Well, you know, how can you dismiss this so quickly?" And to me, it just had all the earmarks of a fake. And at the time, I remember Robert Kiviat, who was the producer of that show, was saying that how important this was. And I, in fact, the newspaper article had a photograph of Kiviat and a photograph of myself. I refer to it as a P.T. Barnum hoax, and I stuck to it. And, of course, later on, Kiviat wound up eating his words and had to admit that footage was a phony. Meanwhile, Kiviat made a lot of money on alien autopsy film and program and subsequent programs in which he debunked his own program.
Lawrence Rockefeller, of course, he's no longer with us.
Yeah.
I think had he lived maybe even a few more years, he might have been able to help the UFO field quite a bit.
Lawrence Rockefeller, yeah, he was already in his almost mid-80s at the time when he ordered a study. This was a study that was conducted to present the best evidence for UFOs and extraterrestrials visiting Earth. And the idea of the study was to present this evidence to 1,000 of the world leaders, of movers and shakers on the international stage. And copies of this report went to President Clinton, to Henry Kissinger, to Jacques Chirac of France, and to many, many, many world leaders and all members of Congress. Now, the conclusion was a bombshell conclusion. The conclusion was that UFOs are visiting Earth, and that there's an international cover-up to prevent the public from finding out. Rockefeller made an attempt with the Clinton White House to to open up the essentially the White House X-Files. And he had a meeting with...
John Podesta, right?
I'm sorry?
Was it with John Podesta?
No, no, not with John Podesta. He had a meeting with the White House science advisor, John Gibbons, at the time.
All right.
And Gibbons, unfortunately, was very, very... basically wanted to block it and successfully did block it. I mean, there was a meeting that took place at the White House, which Gibbons later denied, but I've seen documentation. There was definitely a meeting that took place at the White House. And the idea... what Rockefeller was trying to engineer, and I say that advisedly, he was trying to arrange for some of the individuals who had worked at the Pentagon in the 1960s and 70s to come forward with their information about the reality of UFOs and the UFO cover-up. And he wanted to arrange for congressional immunity, or presidential immunity, I should say. And that would require, of course, Bill Clinton's okay, and the White and Clinton's science advisor Gibbons just wouldn't hear about it, unfortunately.
When we come back from the break, I want to ask you, Michael, about a person that I think has been so influential in kind of lessening the blow about ufology, and that's got to be Steven Spielberg. Through his movies, Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., the Extraterrestrial, I think he's kind of softened people up to understand that if there's going to be disclosure, I think a lot of people are ready for it. And I think one of the reasons why would be the movies of Steven Spielberg. Let's talk about that when we come right back. And then we'll continue just to talk about what you continue to do, your research in this field. And then later on, we'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to talk with our guest tonight, Michael Luckman, who's the director of the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research. He's also founder of what is called the Cosmic Majority, which is an organization probably that you are a member that seeks to advance the views of the majority of people living on Earth who believe in UFOs, life on other planets. I do, throughout the universe. And welcome back to Coast with our guest, Michael Luckman. Michael, Steven Spielberg, though he's not directly related to the music industry, he has had, I think, a profound effect on everyone and really getting them desensitized into UFOs. What do you think?
Oh, there's no question that Spielberg has certainly been greatly responsible for change of attitude on the part of the public. I mean, Close Encounters came out now, I think it was perhaps almost 25 years ago, over 20 years ago for sure. He's had a great impact on the public, and E.T., his film E.T. as well. I mean, huge box office numbers and great influence around the world. It's slightly troubling to me, frankly, that his new movie, War of the Worlds, is, you know, totally a different kind of scenario in which it's an alien invasion scenario, which, of course, we're familiar with because that's what the War of the Worlds story is all about. He said himself that he thought that, that it would be, that he wanted, after having done movies like Close Encounters, which made him essentially the ambassador to extraterrestrials, that he wanted to do one of what he referred to as one of these nasty 1950s-type invasion movies. The networks, by the way, are planning, just about all of them are planning this fall, and this is very unusual. And I think it's because of the success of the Spielberg movie, ongoing series having to do with aliens that are not so nice, that are in two cases inhabiting our seas or oceans.
Well, you know, let me ask you this, Michael, because you bring up something very interesting, something that I've thought about for a long, long time. First of all, with someone like Spielberg, is it possible that government has told him about this? Maybe these aren't friendly. I don't think they are. David Jacobs doesn't believe they're all friendly. And maybe he has, through his ability, been trying to communicate some things with us over the years. Do you think that he was basically asked, help us out here?
That's not an impossible scenario. I don't have any reason to believe that specifically in this case, but... who knows? It's very hard to tell. Certainly this is a subject that troubles the government greatly. Ultimately, of course, I was once asked by a New York Times reporter, why would the government want to you know, keep this secret, wouldn't this be a tremendous breakthrough to have contact with a highly advanced civilization? And I said no, because, you know, ultimately they would be calling the shots, and that means that our government leaders wouldn't. And they're, you know, concerned about us answering to a higher authority, so to speak.
Well, do you know how in Close Encounters, how Richard Dreyfuss, the main character, left, jumped in the spaceship and took off, and, you know, gosh, we never knew when he would come back, probably hundreds of years, his family would have been grown and gone by that time. Spielberg today says that now that he has understood the way of a family, because he has one, that he never would have had his main character leave and get on a ship and take off.
Yeah.
Interesting how his perspective has changed a little bit that way.
It is interesting, but, you know, there's another explanation for it, too, and that there's a plausible explanation, and that is that there seems to be something going on in terms of mass psychology, you know, in the wake of the terrible 9/11 situation, where the public seems to, for some reason, go for these type of alien invasion stories at times of stress, just as they did in, you know, during the Cold War era of the 50s, when there were so many flying saucer movies.
Who's your favorite rock star, by the way?
Oh, I don't know. I can't say a particular rock star. I mean, I think Mick Jagger and David Bowie would be two of my favorites.
Yeah, we didn't talk too much about Marilyn Manson yet. Not Marilyn Monroe, Marilyn Manson. Tell me about
Manson is of course totally outrageous, and he does believe in extraterrestrials, and many people think that he's an extraterrestrial, like they think Michael Jackson's an extraterrestrial. But he's lent his name and his image to a video game that has to do with Area 51, and now there's a film project, and there's talk that he might be one of the stars in the film about Area 51, which should be coming out this year.
Yeah, that may be a pretty good hit, too.
I mean, you know, everyone's heard, of course, of Area 51's been, you know, very much part of the popular culture at this point.
Cat Stevens, you mentioned him in your book. Of course, his real name now, Yusuf Islam.
Yes. Cat Stevens has had a number of songs that use UFO imagery, and he's very much a believer. He had an incident happen. We don't have a lot of detail on that incident, but we do know the description that he gave is very interesting, because at least a number of other abductees have had similar instances where he said that he was basically vacuumed up or sucked up into a flying saucer, that he had gone to sleep, and that the next thing he knows, essentially there's a UFO above him, and that he's you know, sucked up into this thing and then let go later. He made it a point that he did not feel that he was that this was a dream or anything other than a real happening.
You know, the French astrophysicist Jacques Vallée.
Yes,
he was depicted in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I mean, he was the French guy in that movie. We tried to get him on the program. He's been on Coast to Coast before, a long time ago. He doesn't want to talk about these things anymore. He's done with it. He has written the books that he's going to write, and we asked him basically, Dr. Vallée, would you like to come on? There's so many things. But he doesn't believe they're extraterrestrials. He believes in something else, that they're more dimensional and somewhat demonic, quite frankly. But he doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't know what happened in his particular case. I have heard that he's you know, not public anymore with it. And he certainly has written a lot of books and had a huge contribution to make to the subject. You know, I would be the last person to say that they're all friendly. I mean, like, I live here in New York City, and certainly not all of the population is friendly.
Right.
So I don't think that they're all necessarily friendly. But my main point on that very important question is that if there are unfriendly ones, which I'm sure there are some, they have not come down here in thousands of years to cause any harm to the population. Certainly nothing like a War of the Worlds type scenario to enslave mankind.
Well, I got to tell you, Michael, very, very thorough book, and it was also, I bet it was fun for you to write.
It was tremendous fun. I mean, I really never thought that these things ran as deep as they do. And of course, it just was sort of a natural progression. It did go from UFO incidents to into the paranormal and life after death and all of these things. And as I say, I mean, right now I have enough for at least one more book on the subject. I've been getting bombarded recently with CDs from all kinds of groups. You know, a lot of groups out there that aren't well known necessarily, or are not that well known, who have recorded music on this subject, and I'd like to give them a shot at, you know, being in the book. And if any of those groups are out there, by the way, they can, and anyone else, any other musicians who particularly who have had UFO experiences or want to make contact or be part of the Signal of Space concerts, can send me an email. We have a special email address set up at alienrockstars@aol.com, and, you know, we'll certainly be in touch.
Jerry Garcia, once as he visited Egypt to look at the Great Pyramid, because they did some live concerts there, did they not?
They did. They did a live concert in front of the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. And they also they had quite an adventure while they were there in Egypt, which I talk about in Alien Rock, and including that they had did some Bob Weir, I believe it was, did some experiments, acoustical experiments, where they went into a big open sarcophagus in the king's chamber in the pyramid, and they sang. They went in one or two at a time, and they sang in there, and they had some very interesting effects, sound effects. It definitely intensified their singing.
Didn't Garcia also, didn't he lie down in one of the sarcophaguses?
Yeah, I think Jerry did too. Yes, absolutely.
I wonder look what happened to him. I mean, that I wouldn't do that. Would you? It was scary.
A little scary, maybe. Quite adventurous. I don't know. I wouldn't have done that so fast, no.
Okay, so as we move ahead, looking at the various subject matter at hand, where do you get all the data, the pictures? How do you get this information to people just freely? You didn't steal it from them, so how'd you get it?
Well, I'll tell you, I had the idea to write this book some years ago. It took about 3 years to conduct the investigation and to put the book together. The Internet was a very major source. You know, it just so happens that my interest in writing the book and my getting computer literate happened to coincide, because I was one of these people who avoided the computer, I'm sorry to say. So when you first discover the computer, how to use the Internet, people tend to stay up long hours playing with it, and just because you're just blown away by all of the unbelievable amounts of information that's there. And so I just started to do that, and you know, it's kind of, in a certain way, I mean, there's a technique, of course, to it, as you learn as you go, but in a certain way also it's sort of like playing a informational slot machine. You don't know, you're punching keywords, you never know exactly what's going to come up and what's out there. And if you do it long enough, as I did, on some of the key players and some of the key words, that was very, very helpful, the information that I gleaned from that. And, of course, the information also came from reading of a huge number of books, magazine articles, personal interviews, email interviews, you know, all kinds of contacts like that. But it was, you know, an enormous job. There was a lot of stuff that I wanted to put in the book that I wasn't able to put in the book. Alien Rock right now is 320 pages, and it comes a time we have to stop writing the book, as my editor told me, and let them put it out.
What was, of everything you wrote about, what was your favorite story in the book?
Well, to me, the story with the greatest impact is the, you know, as you pointed out earlier about Elvis, how he had not just one incident. I mean, he had a myriad of incidents happen to him. And now Elvis, also, there's this faith that's almost a real religion that seems to be growing up around Elvis. Theologians have spoken about it. When you think about it, you know, the people have what amounts to is altars to Elvis in their home and, you know, various places all over the world. Even the Elvis impersonators are a sign of that. And certainly the whole way where people go to Graceland and the candlelight procession that takes place and people leaving messages for Elvis on the wall, which in certain ways resembles the Wailing Wall in terms of where they messages are put into the Wailing Wall between the cracks. There's a what really amounts to a religion in the making with, you know, Elvis as almost a messianic or, you know, musical messiah, sort of.
Did any of these people dabble in the occult? You know, where did they follow some of the things that Aleister Crowley used to talk
about?
Yeah,
well, Led Zeppelin, you know, the people from Led Zeppelin have. I mean, I talk about the heavy metal groups a little bit in the book, not too extensively. You know, I don't go into that side of it too much. I mean, I know that that Bowie, for example, had gotten into that at one point, but that's not my... That's not the area that I'm concentrating on. These essentially seem to be positive experiences that most of these people have had, although at the time it may have shaken them up. But still, on balance, it seems that they were very fairly positive or very positive experiences.
Well, I got to tell you though, it is strange. I think there are two different camps out there, Michael. You know, the camp that witnesses UFOs, maybe on a scientific plane, and then you've got these others who are, you know, really kind of, I think, dabbling in something they shouldn't play with. And that's that could be dangerous, don't you think?
Well, I'm not exactly, yeah, but I'm not exactly sure what you mean in terms of dabbling with something dangerous. What?
Well, I think you can conjure up things.
Oh yeah, I do think it is dangerous. I do think that you know, you play with fire and you get burned. I do think that part of that approach can be dangerous. Yes,
Michael, the book again, Alien Rock. Where do you get it?
Okay, Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection. By the way, it's a book published by VH1 and Pocket Books, which is part of Simon & Schuster. You can get it through Amazon.com. Although I understood it was sold out this last week, but it's probably replenished by now.
Really? Who's the publisher?
VH1 and Pocket Books.
Okay. All right. Very good.
And, of course, you can get them at Barnes & Noble and almost any of the major books.
Sounds like a TV show.
We're working on a TV show, and I'm also working on a possible movie. I mean, I like to do a rock and roll documentary with concert footage, interviews with major stars that we talk about in the book and lots of others that I'm sure will come out of the closet, so to speak.
It would be a natural for you.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't believe how many different rock stars there are who had these kinds of experiences.
I know. And it's really, you know, it's really I'm realizing, I mean, I'm watching on a daily basis how word's getting around about the book. And, you know, I'm being interviewed by, you know, I was interviewed the other morning by a rock station in Ireland. I understand there's a story about the Michael Jackson stuff that's in my book that was published by the Times of India, and not a day goes by that I'm being blown away by the kind of response the book is getting. I mean, I think it really is a revolutionary book, not to overstate it, but I never thought that I would have that kind of information that goes as far as it does. I mean, I think that the reason that extraterrestrials are in touch with rock stars, rock personalities, is because they want to, reach out to the popular culture, to the masses, through the pop icons that are here right now, and try to affect us, really, and to have peaceful contact with us.
Mick Jagger, he's had some cases too, didn't he?
Yes, Mick did, particularly when he was somewhat younger over in England, for example. First of all, what was interesting, he had one of his homes, an estate that he had in England, had a flying saucer detector in it. And this thing would go off all the time. Whenever he'd leave a place, it would go off. So presumably there were some UFOs in that area. Keith Richards had a sighting. UFOs were seen at the Altamont concert at the time when Mick's on stage. You can see in the Maisley Brothers film, hundreds of people in the crowd turning and looking at some unknown object up in the sky. Mick Taylor, the former guitarist for the Rolling Stones, went on a sky watch, saw UFOs. Mick Jagger, when he was with his girlfriend Marianne Faithfull, saw a rare cigar-shaped mothership. I have two photos in the book, not taken by Mick, but that show what those motherships look like. These are craft large enough to perhaps the size of 2 or 3 football fields that contain scout ships. And so there is definitely, a strong connection with the Rolling Stones. But Brian Jones, very few people know this. Brian Jones went out at midnight, would go out looking for UFOs. He would drive many, many miles.
It probably added to his creativity. Stay with us, Michael. I've got to read from you just a little bit of the book Alien Rock. Again, we kind of talked about this in the beginning of the program, about Elvis's earliest encounter with a UFO occurred sometime during the 50s in the desert. Just listen to what happened. We were away from the fire, quotes the desert, and we saw the light in the sky moving weird, not like a plane or anything else. And it was different looking than a plane. It got brighter and it was coming in closer. It was way up there, but we could see it on account of the moon and the way it was lit up. It was cigar-shaped, oblong, rounded, and had some window portholes on one end and had lights along the bottom. But the thing had no wings, no means of being up there. Elvis continued, "Well, we were watching it, and the guys at camp started hollering 'cause they saw it too. And then we all ran to each other and got quiet when we heard the sound it made. It was like electricity, buzzing and metallic sound, not like an engine we ever heard, and then it got kind of over us, still high, mind you, but up over us. Our hair began to prickle, stood up on my arms, my head, and I got this weird feeling like I was about to float any minute." That's a quote from Elvis Presley. Michael Luckman, our guest. Michael, we are fans of the late Johnny Cash, and I notice he's in your book, Alien Rock. Tell us a little bit about this story, can you?
Johnny apparently had an interest in paranormal-type subjects. We don't know too much about it, but when he was buried, actually, he was buried with a guitar pick from the first... UFO music festival at Merle Haggard.
That was in Roswell, wasn't it?
Roswell, yeah. Roswell, New Mexico. Where, by the way, very recently, the group, the Foo Fighters, performed in a very hangar where the craft was temporarily stored.
Well, I wonder if they got the entire slogan, Men in Black, because of Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash, of course, was the original Man in Black.
He was, yeah. He was. He did make a statement.
Yeah, he was. Actually, many of the country artists have really been getting into this. Willie Nelson is a great... Willie and Merle Haggard have been great fans of AM Coast to Coast. They listen all the time.
Let's go to the phones. You ready?
Yes.
First-time caller line. You're on the air. Where are you calling from?
This is Kathy from Long Beach.
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
With all due respect... Well, first, good morning.
Good morning.
And with all due respect, every rock star that you're claiming that has these ET adventures or whatever, they're all like dope addicts. They all take so much drugs. How can you believe them?
Well, let me say this. The culture really seems to be divided, and there's a great overlap, of course, but there are the people who are into the drugs to a certain extent, some of them, unfortunately, way too much for their own health. There are also people who drink. People who drink moderately and people who drink a lot. You just can't write off all of these sightings on the basis of somebody who might have had a drink or two, or somebody, even for that matter, who might have smoked a marijuana cigarette. But really, there have been many of these cases. There have been sober individuals who have been eyewitnesses to the events as they unfolded, such as, for example, with Elvis out in the desert. his bodyguards and all the people surrounding him were there at the time when that took place. So I really don't think the drug thing is the explanation for what's happening. I think it's much more profound than that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, appreciate it. Have you been following the story of Prophet Yahweh, Michael?
Yes, I've heard a little bit about him, yes.
You know, there was some pretty neat video that a Las Vegas television station shot with him
yes.
the first time. But then after that, everything, I think, kind of went downhill, and he was unable to summon anything up by his self, proclaimed deadline.
Yeah, it seemed that way. I mean, I was keeping a close eye on it, because certainly if there was somebody like that, who was able, regardless of whether he calls himself a prophet or not, who was able to seemingly make contact with extraterrestrials, we would probably want to have him next summer at the Signal of Space concerts, because the whole idea is to try to bring a spacecraft down, have contact.
And now he's going on tour in August. He wants to go around the country.
Yes.
He wants to hit every state and summon them up. And, you know, I guess the point is, I don't want to attack the poor old prophet here, but do you think people really have an ability to summon up a UFO?
I don't know that people, if you're asking me psychically whether people can summon up a UFO, I would say that there may be some instances in which it's happened, but I would say very, very rare. But there are things that can be done and that have been used very successfully to make contact with UFOs, to summon UFOs, if you will, or at least to make contact when UFOs have been sighted at some distance. And, basically things it's called signaling, using something as simple as a flashlight, or in other cases, scientists have used lasers, and we certainly expect to be using lasers at the Signal Space concerts next summer, where there has been intelligent contact made, where there's been an intelligent response to signals that have been sent.
Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George, and hi, Mr. Luckman.
Hello.
Well, George, you've really been having some powerhouse programs here lately.
Well, thank
really
you.
They're really fantastic. Well, I wanted to relate my UFO sighting, and I also had a question for Mr. Luckman. Back in, I think it was 1978. I have this all written in my diary, but I can't find that right now. But I can recollect. I'm a self-taught musician, and I was really drumming on this vinyl chair very intensely, working on the Yes song, Heart of the Sunrise, and I have a bedroom window to the right, and this was like around 8 in the evening, and while I was doing this intense song, playing the drum on it, this beautiful golden light was just dropping vertically straight down, and I stopped the music, I stopped what I was doing, and I thought, what a beautiful falling star, and it fell and it stopped in mid-sky, and I thought, well, this is no falling star. And so I was watching it, and it was brighter than anything else in the sky, and it had a golden light as opposed to starlight, which is sort of a bluish white. And it proceeded to move up and down back to the original position. Then it moved in a triangular position, and then it swung like a pendulum in midair, and then returned to its center position, and then just, it looked like it dropped down really fast, but it just vanished so quickly, and I just thought, wow, that was certainly no craft that we have that could do anything like that. And I just wanted to relate that UFO sighting of mine, and I have a question for Mr. Luckman that I haven't gotten your book yet, so I'm wondering if you included Sid Barrett in it, especially since he wrote Astronomy Domine and Interstellar Overdrive for the first Pink Floyd album, which was Piper at the Gates of Dawn, which came out in 1967.
Yes, well, I do discuss Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd is one of the groups that I didn't have an opportunity really to go in as much detail as I would have liked to, because I had limited space, but I'll be doing more with Pink Floyd. But, yeah, I discuss particularly Dark Side of the Moon. And, of course, Pink Floyd now has also reestablish themselves, and they're going back out on tour.
Okay, thanks for that. I appreciate it. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
This is Scott calling from Slime, Kansas.
Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you had anything on Ace Frehley from Kiss.
Oh, he sure does. There's almost a whole series addressed to him, huh?
Yeah, we've got Ace's picture in the book. The book, again, is called Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection. And Ace has had a number of sightings, the most recent, which I believe was about 2 years ago, up at his estate in Westchester County in New York, which is an area that's generally been a heavy number of sightings up in that area. And he claims that there was a... some kind of a craft came down, which he claims he filmed, actually. And I have not seen the film. And that left a 30-foot impression in the ground on his estate. So he's one of the people who's, like, very, very, very strong, one of the rock and roll stars who's very, very strongly into this subject.
Yeah, he claimed he was abducted, didn't he?
Well, he didn't himself claim that he was abducted, but he said certain things that led me to believe that an abduction might have taken place.
Well, he has incredible stuff, too, about a burn mark 27 feet in diameter.
Yes, yes.
I wonder if he's got that on tape for us.
I think the tape is very important. I'm certainly trying to contact to see that tape because there you go with physical evidence.
Absolutely. Space Ace, I guess they called him sometimes,
yes.
Huh?
Ace, the spaceman is what they call him.
Yeah. Wild Card Line, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Ken calling from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi, Ken. Welcome.
Thanks. Hey, I wanted to ask your guest a couple questions. Number one, since he spoke of Led Zeppelin, do you feel that the song Stairway to Heaven has any relevance to your poppycock about aliens?
About what?
Aliens and rock and roll.
Yeah, what's your question? We didn't get it.
My question is, do you feel that Jim Page, John Bonham, and the Bunch had anything to do with writing Stairway to Heaven in regard to, or did aliens have anything to do with that song?
Well, with helping them.
Hmm. Well, Jimmy Page himself said that he was in a terrible mood at the time when he wrote the song. He wasn't really scratching some things out on paper, and he nearly leapt out of his chair when he saw what was there, namely the lyrics of Stairway to Heaven. Now, where did that come from? He said it definitely didn't come from him. I'm just hypothesizing based on what other rock stars have said that this is coming from outside of their mind, that they're channeling stuff that's coming from somewhere else off planet.
No, and I think it sounds as if you're describing most artists, and if you remember the history of music, you'll know that many times people go into trance when they're becoming artistic. Way back to the time when people banged on drums.
Yes,
before they went to war.
Well, that's true, and I do discuss that a little bit in the book.
And well, it's very possible, in that kind of trance-like state, that you get some kind of message from someone or somewhere. I wonder if it's even the hereafter. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are all kinds of things interdimensionally that can be happening. I mean, I definitely believe that. Extraterrestrials exist in different dimensions. We're not only talking about inhabitants of a planet necessarily.
Thanks for your call, Ken. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Going once. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I already had asked my question, but I will make a quick comment that John Lennon on the song Out of the Blue from Mind Games in 1973 mentioned, like a UFO, you came to me.
Which was in reference to Yoko, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thanks again. Wild Card Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Yeah.
You mentioned Merle Haggard. Merle Haggard was on with Art Bell for the whole 5 hours one night.
Yes, he was.
It was incredible. Elton John had a song on his Caribou album called I've Seen the Saucers.
Yes.
Do you have a report of a UFO sighting from either Elton John or Bernie Taupin?
No, I do not. I don't have a report of that at all. But, of course, Rocket Man I mean, thematically, there's definitely at least an outer space connection with it. And they did do, as you said, that song, I've Seen the Saucers, which is a great song.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Okay. Appreciate it. I do like this new picture you've got about the human-like face on Mars.
Isn't that a killer? I mean, I defy anybody to look at that and say that was just made by NASA. Actually, has the nerve to claim that's just a pile of rocks.
I mean, it is weird. I mean, it looks like hair, two eye sockets, a nose, and a mouth. It even looks like it has a cheekbone.
Yes, absolutely. No, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing photograph. And anyone who hasn't seen it should definitely buy the book for that alone, because actually, when I introduced that on Art Bell's program a couple of years ago, I guess it was, my God, I mean, I had gotten something like 70,000 hits on my website. So it's people really like that picture.
East of the Rockies, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Welcome.
My name is Dave, calling from Columbus, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
And my question is there any kind of connection between the untimely deaths of all three Ramones, and especially 3 years, and UFOs or the paranormal?
Of who? The Ramones?
The Ramones?
Yeah, no, I don't know of any paranormal connections. Certainly, I don't. There's no UFO connection I'm aware of either with the Ramones.
All right, just asking, man. Thanks.
Okay, appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go to another call before we got to get going for this break. West of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Gabe from Walla Walla, Washington.
Hey, Gabe. Hi.
Hi, I was just wondering about Bob Dylan.
Any sightings with the Bob Dylan?
No sightings with Bob Dylan that I'm aware of. I do, however, include Bob Dylan in a section called Cosmic Personalities, but I include him in a different way than you might think. Talked about him as an end times prophet who's predicted really the Middle East situation and the fact that it could explode into a World War III. He definitely believes that we're living in the end times.
When did he make these predictions? A long time ago?
He made these predictions a long time ago. I would say maybe about 12, 15 years ago.
Well, let's hope he's not correct.
Yes.
But you never know. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there. Hello.
Hey, me?
Yeah, you.
Yeah, Kevin. Hey, who's this?
Hey, Kevin, this is George. What's happening?
George, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, is your guest still on with you?
Yeah, he's waiting for you.
Okay, I just wanted to know if you were familiar with the group Jane's Addiction, who's headed by a guy named Perry Farrell.
Yes.
And I didn't know if he had any stories about him, but he did an offshoot, a band called Porno for Pyros.
Yes.
And one of their best-known songs is a song called Pets. And if you listen really closely to the lyrics, he speaks about the human race, and he has some great metaphors about how we start out as children, and then we kind of get more messed up as adults, and then when we're elderly, we become children again. And he sort of makes fun of the human race, and then he talks about, will there ever be another race to come on down and take over Earth from us? And what will they do? You know, will they destroy us? What would they do with us?
Right.
And then finally, he gets into the song about saying that we'd make great pets.
Yeah.
You know? And then that's the main lyric of the song.
Yeah.
We'll make great pets. We'll make great pets. And he talks about, you know, how we go to war and all the crazy things that we do to each other. And it's just, I wasn't sure if you were familiar with the song, but it's Porno for Pyros, and the name of the song is Pets. And no matter what kind of musical background you come from, whether it's classic rock or new rock or whatever, it's just a real catchy tune. And if you listen to it, the lyrics, the irony of it and the comedy of it, yet the seriousness of it, talking about how we've been around for a tenth of the time of the dinosaurs and we're kind of doing ourselves in faster than they did. And,
well,
yeah.
It's very possible that's going to happen. We'll be back. Michael, we haven't had a chance yet to talk about Madonna, but she is highlighted in your book.
Well, yes. She's in the Cosmic Personality section of Alien Rock. Of course, what qualifies her for being in that section is her great interest in the Kabbalah. And there is a extraterrestrial connection, if you will, with the Kabbalah in terms of the history of the Kabbalah. and references that are made in the Kabbalah text about basically UFOs from biblical times.
Let's go back to the phones west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Why don't you get us started? Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
This is Bruce from Tempe, Arizona.
Hey, Bruce. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
What about the Moody Blues? Is there a connection with them?
Well, yeah. Actually, I do talk about the Moody Blues and something that happened long, long time ago in England where a cigar-shaped craft flew over the car that they were riding in and landed in an adjacent field. And they got a pretty close encounter. Graham Edge of the group, I believe he's the drummer, did draw a traditional gray alien, if you will, and we do have the photograph. I'm sorry, the which it was photographed. We do have the drawing reproduced in Alien Rock of the alien that they may have encountered.
Well, you know, when Justin Hayward wrote some of his songs, he said that he didn't really know where they came from. He just wrote them down.
Yeah, well, that's the EMF, extraterrestrial musical forces at work.
Okay, well, thanks.
All right, I appreciate you, Bruce, calling the first-time caller line. Welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, George?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hey, hold on a second.
That's the worst-sounding truck horn I've ever heard.
I had to do it, brother.
Okay,
how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've been a long time listener, over 10, almost 11 years. First time caller, but finally got on the air. And the guy right before me, before the break, totally stole my thunder. That's the exact same question I was going to ask. My heart just sank. I almost hung up. I thought I was going to lose signal, but I wanted to ask your guest. Why is it just rock stars that are, you know, in tune with this? Why not doctors? Why not, you know, businessmen, truckers, whatever?
Well,
you know?
I don't know. I think that it's across the board. I mean, obviously, many hundreds of thousands of people apparently worldwide have experienced UFO abductions, and millions of people have had sightings in all walks of life. But what I'm concentrating on in this book and what I believe is very important is that extraterrestrials and rock and roll stars, if you will, have made a connection. And I believe that the reason that the extraterrestrials are interested is that they can influence popular culture. And I believe that they're doing that right now in terms of have been for the past 50 years or more in terms of much of the music that's out there.
Yeah. George?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that you are the number one. I just got XM not too long ago, and you are the number one station next to Opie and Anthony there on my XM, the only ones I listen to.
All right, well, thanks. I appreciate it. You drive carefully.
Thank you, George. That's
all right.
Great, man.
You take care. We've got a lot of truck drivers listen to the show, Michael, on a regular basis. There's another book for you there, Michael.
Okay.
Visions of Truck Drivers.
Okay.
UFO Things. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello there.
Yeah, where are you calling from, sir?
This is Brett. I'm calling from Carthage, Missouri.
Okay, sure thing.
Wanted to ask the guest if he had noted in his book any of the songs or subject matter from either of the groups, Rush, one entire side of one album, 2112, is dedicated to this subject matter, and or Blue Oyster Cult.
Well, yeah, particularly Blue Oyster Cult. I mean, Rush, I am aware of, but Blue Oyster Cult, of course, they've dealt thematically with this song, and there was a woman by the name of Helen Wheels, or at least that was her stage name, who wrote some of their hit songs for Blue Oyster Cult, and had a very interesting experience out on Long Island where she was abducted. Her brother watched, and it was a cigar-shaped craft that came by, and she reported being the same way. I noticed the connection here, the same way that Cat Stevens spoke about being sucked up or vacuumed up, as she put it, into the craft is what happened. And then she was lying on the table, and the rest of it, you know, goes along the usual lines of contact where certain experiments are being performed before she's released back down to Earth and put back in bed.
I see.
Okay, thank you. The Beatles in total, you know, we talked about John Lennon, but the Beatles overall, did any of their music reflect UFOs, extraterrestrials?
Well, you know, I would say not necessarily. I mean, yes, I mean, there have been some songs here and there. I think that what's interesting is that Ringo Starr, who believes in life on Mars, by the way, the existence of life on Mars, and he feels it might be interdimensional. But he had an album called Goodnight Vienna, in which he is standing on the ramp of a spaceship in a scene directly taken from The Day the Earth Stood Still. And so he's a space visitor standing there next to Gort the robot. And, you know, so it shows where his heart is on this subject.
Let's go to our – who's up next anyway? Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, it's Christina from Honolulu, Hawaii.
Hi, Christina. Way out there. Hi there.
Hi. Nice to be on the air. And my question for you, George, and for your guest is whether Mr. Luckman or yourself have ever considered the connection between a person named Lucifer. Now, I totally believe all the things that are going on that you're saying and that people are had these, you know, visitations. I'm not poo-pooing any of that in any way. But I also believe the scriptures and have considered that Lucifer was the star of the morning, the bright and morning star, and the leader of worship in heaven before he rebelled, according to the scripture, and him and a third of the angels got kicked out. Now, the whole thought of, okay, they're not bad, they're not coming to enslave us, but I wonder if perhaps the spirit behind it is a connection to music to maybe more get the soul of the generations something to think about. I'd appreciate a comment about
okay.
that, and I really have enjoyed the last hour and a half. I'm a first-time caller, and I stayed on the line because I just thought, wow, have they ever thought about this?
Okay, now do you want to listen to the response on your radio, or do you want us to put you on hold?
Hey, however.
What's easier for you? Well, I don't want you to lose a response. We talked earlier, Michael, about the possibility of demonic things associated with some of this, but you didn't come across much of that, did you?
No, I really haven't. Of course, you know, Billy Graham, for example, feels that these are UFOs essentially are angelic,
fallen angels. Objects. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, it depends on your point of view. But no, I didn't really come across it. On the other hand, you know, undoubtedly it's likely to exist in some form somewhere. But my investigation has not borne that out at all. But I will say this, in the general musical arena, in that chapter where I talk about extraterrestrial musical forces, I do pose the question because, you know, some people think that this music is that rock and roll music is from the devil, particularly black metal, heavy metal and black metal music. And then other people feel that, you know, that rock and roll is totally benign.
See, I don't believe that they're demonic, but I do believe that they may not all be good.
They may not all be good, but it seems to me that you know that they would have taken us over a long time ago if they weren't.
Maybe they have, Michael. Do you ever think about that?
Well,
how do you know I haven't been?
I really don't know. I don't know you that well.
Thanks for the call, Christina. Let's pick it up next. We'll go to East of the Rockies. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Grand Prairie, Texas.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
I think E.T. kind of likes rock and roll because he likes the guitar.
It may be right there.
I was calling about the Styx song, Come Sail Away, where they're talking about climbing aboard the starship.
Yeah. There's a treasure trove of this. I mean, it's just endless when you start to look into it of songs that with with E.T. type of lyrics.
Have any type of experience?
Did who? Anybody? Members of Styx?
Not much. Not in your book.
Not that I've heard of. No, I haven't heard of that, no. But again, you know, I mean, as much information as in the book, and there's a tremendous amount of information, but there are people who have not, who have had these experiences and who, you know, have not put that information out. And but I'm sure that many, many, many of these musicians will be stepping forward, and that's what my hope is for Alien Rock 2 for the sequel book.
Cool. I got something for George, if you got a minute.
Yeah.
Been listening to Coast to Coast for about 2 years now, and I think it's a great show. I've lost a lot of sleep. And I kind of thought of something the other day that kind of fits your show, and it kind of goes like, there's signs in the sky and under our feet. It's time for us and God to meet.
I like that. I like that. A little poetry. Thanks.
That's for you, George.
Okay, my friend. You take care. Boy, this picture of Marilyn Manson is hideous that you have.
Well, yeah, that's Marilyn Manson for you. Some people think that he's the Antichrist, by the way.
Well, you never know. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, name's Tony, calling from Buffalo, listening on WBEN.
Hey, Tony.
I was going to just say that there was a, I play guitar myself, and there was a band, a tribute band for Jimi Hendrix that played about a year ago in this area. And I wish I could remember the name of the band, but anyhow, this guy apparently has done, he's got a book out regarding Jimi Hendrix and a CD, and I actually got it. And he's done, I guess, a lot of research on Jimi Hendrix, and from what I read just the gist of the book, I really didn't read the entire book, but I guess he was into all kinds of, not all kinds of stuff, but you had mentioned earlier about some kind of connection with him believing in UFOs, and I guess he was into a lot of astrology and you know, things of that sort. And I was wondering how deep he was into this.
He was very much into these sorts of subjects. He was into astral travel, astral projection, for example, out of body experiences, and very much affected him. Throughout his career, though it was a short career, unfortunately.
And even in his lyrics, is that some of his lyrics portray some of that? Because according to what I was reading that this guy wrote about his history, it made it sound like there was a lot of that, those innuendos involved in his lyrics.
Yeah, there's on his EXP album, he has an introduction in which he talks about it's sort of a novelty type song in the beginning where a spaceman comes down and he's interviewed by a fictional news announcer. And, Hendrix, over and over again, Hendrix talks about it. In fact, one of the last things he wrote was a poem about flying saucers. His dad, by the way, commissioned a sculptor to make a sculpture of a flying saucer for his burial site.
Hey, Tony, say hi to Tom Bowerly for me on BEN, would you?
Oh, yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
One other comment I was going to make. Earlier you had mentioned something about Jerry Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And something about a praying mantis looking like an E.T.
Yeah, it sounds wild, but exactly what he described.
Well, you know, just it was synchronicity or whatever you want to call it, but about an hour before you said that, I was outside. I'm very intrigued by insects, and I had come across two praying mantises outside, and I just had them crawling around on my hand as I'm looking at this thing, and it looks exactly your face. I was just looking. You are a very interesting creature. You just look like an E.T.
They do look like little E.T.s,
and,
don't they?
They do, and on top of it, as I said, I play guitar, and I don't know how many times people have told me I look like Jerry Garcia. It all fell into place. It was just too kind of weird.
Well,
you know, the way it happened. But.
Yeah, the praying mantis is that or the insectoid presences, as Jerry Garcia referred to them, were undoubtedly 5 or 6 foot tall.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tony.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. You knew Tiny Tim.
Yes, I did, yes.
Now you talk about an alien.
Well, yeah. Tiny was a wonderful person, but what you see is what you get. I mean, he was like the Michael Jackson of his day.
What was his real name? Was Richard Corey or something?
Herbert Corey.
Herbert Corey.
But he was a very sweet person. I'll tell you a little story real fast. I had an idea for Tiny to shoot a rock video, Takeoff on Boy George, the Karma Chameleon song.
Yeah.
And I once went up to his management place, and we had tiny play. It was like 10 in the morning, and had a tiny record of the song, or attempt to record the song. And the first thing he said is, "Mr. Luckman, would it be all right to for me to get some beer?" So he needed that for, you know, to limber up his vocal cords.
That's funny. I'll always remember when he got married on the Johnny Carson show.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Vicky, right?
Miss Vicky, yes.
He was something. Carson made him, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He really did.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yes, sir.
How's it going, man?
Good,
I'm Jack
good,
from Tampa.
Go ahead.
I can't believe you guys haven't mentioned the master himself yet.
We're waiting for this at the end. I know who you're going to say.
Mr. Osborne.
Yep.
Well, what's the rap?
It's all yours, Michael.
I haven't heard anything about Ozzy Osbourne in regard to UFOs, but I will say this, and this is going to be controversial, but Ozzy Osbourne, at least I came across a quote, and I think it's an authentic quote, said in essence, I hope that as far as the source of his music, I hope that it isn't coming from where I think it may be coming. So I leave you to your own interpretation on that.
All right, your website again, want to give that out?
Well, not. I would like to, anyone who is interested in becoming part of this worldwide movement to contact extraterrestrials through rock music can contact me through. We set up a special email address: alienrockstars@aol.com. Alienrockstars@aol.com.
Simple enough. All right. Good luck with this book. I think you're going to do real well, Michael.
Thank you. I think so.
All right. You take care of yourself.
I appreciate it, George.
Alien Rock is the name of this one. It's called The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection. And I got to tell you, when I started, I couldn't believe how many rock and roll legends have seen or had some kind of extraterrestrial experience. It really is truly unbelievable. Well, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.